Well, today is May 14th, 2009, and you're inside the Opium Den. I'm Daniel Williams, and we're getting set to call our counterpart across the pond, Danny Kuslick. Danny is the founder of the Transform Drug Policy Foundation in the UK. He is now currently their head of policy and communication. And Danny has had a variety of jobs in the drugs field over there. And he is currently a member of the Executive Council of the International Harm Reduction Association, as well as a member of the Advisory Council of the British Society of Criminology. Danny has agreed to join us today, and we want to get the full skinny on what's going on over in Europe, and specifically in Great Britain, with regards to their efforts of drug policy reform. So we're going to hit the button here and give Danny a call and see what's going on. Well, here we go. At least it's ringing.
Good afternoon, Transform.
Yes, good afternoon. Daniel Williams calling for Danny Kuslick.
I'll put you through one sec.
Thank you. Well, he's up and Adam. Of course, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon over there, so there we go. Okay. Come on, Danny. I know you're there. We just talked. Well, let's see here.
Hello, Transform.
Yes, this is Daniel Williams calling for Danny Kuslick for our interview.
Let me try the extension again, one moment.
Thank you. Maybe Danny went out to have a quick smoke. Who knows?
Listening, Transform.
Yes.
The battery on the telephone ran out. Let me put you through to a different one.
The battery went out, okay.
Just 1 second.
Not a problem. That's all right. I love the British accents. So
hello there.
Hello, Danny.
Sorry about that. I don't know whether you're going to need to do the sound checks again, or
no.
I'm going to have to sample a different breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. We want to keep your private breakfast private, but no, I think we're looking good here for the sound check. And
excellent.
I want to welcome you to the Opium Den. I appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
I feel very welcomed.
Well, good. I set it up at the top of the interview before I called you, explaining who you were and all your great efforts over there. But I'd like you to at least start off by giving our listeners an understanding of the Transform Drug Policy Foundation and the work you do in the UK. So, tell
okay.
us all about it.
So, Transform Drug Policy Foundation is a charitable think tank. We think a lot, but we also do a lot. We're also a campaigning outfit. We've been going about 12 years now. So we brief the press. We do some work with policymakers to the extent that we're able. We certainly lobby parliamentarians. We now have a special consultative status at the United Nations, which means, for what it's worth, that we can go and visit drug policy events at the UN. So we take part in those kind of debates too. So we're increasingly international in terms of what we do, but predominantly we work in terms of countering press stories, developing our own thinking around how to critique prohibition and to demonstrate how much more beneficial a system of legal control and regulation without prohibition.
Now that's been your that's been your policy since 1997. That's what you came into being.
Absolutely, we've been very clear that there's a lot of different outfits that do all kinds of different things. We've been very clear from day one that what we're about is ridding the world of the constriction of the global prohibition, which is what what creates the global war on drugs, the need to do away with that and enable individual nation states to determine their own drug policy democratically. It's quite simple.
And do you believe that the United States drug policy is the largest implement to or impediment to making that a reality?
Well, that is actually a really moot question. I think it always has been, and I know that things are potentially going to change with the recent change in presidency. But even without the potential Obama effect, the fact is that individual nation states, regardless of U.S. hegemonic influence through the UN, have been able, had they been willing to gather together to challenge that status quo. I think that there's a danger in seeing the US as the key to absolutely everything, insofar as it's very disempowering for other nation states. And I think that we need to allow the possibility, at least, that things could begin to move, and perhaps we could even reach the finish and put ourselves out of work without the US actually capitulating. Or certainly not leading it. However, clearly, if the U.S. decide, together with other significant nation states, to end the prohibition and move towards a system of control and regulation, it's game over.
Well, I agree with you, but when I visit Amsterdam on a fairly regular basis, I've lectured over there, and actually, my book did quite well over there, which was a big surprise. But I speak to the politicians and drug policy leaders over there, and they seem to concur with me that the U.S., the policy of the United States is what has limited their ability to control the drug policies in their country. In fact, marijuana is not legal there. It is just tolerated because they have told me that should they move towards a truly legal status, that the United States has made it known that it would not be a wise decision. And then when Vicente Fox, our neighbor to the south, several years ago, actually maybe 4 or 5 years ago, proposed the legalization of small amounts of all drugs, the law was about ready to be signed, and then the Bush administration decided that that was not a good idea. So I think it's a great idea that countries are moving independently. But I'm not so sure that until the United States moves in a more positive area and in a more positive manner, that's going to make much difference. So,
well, I think that there is a narrative which has been repeated over the decades, which says that the U.S. holds all the cards. And whilst there are clearly enormous economic and political pressures that are brought to bear upon individual nation states who want to make more progressive moves, the fact is that were we to see a European Union collectively challenging US hegemony, then that changes everything. Or significant players in the European Union, together with, for instance, Canada, Australia, India, if it decided to move on this stuff, together with other nation states from around the world, there would then begin to be a significant breaking of consensus. And I think that is the key. I think that what we've seen, certainly, is individual nation states challenging the status quo and finding it very difficult to move any further. But what we haven't seen is coalitions of nation states at a high level really pushing it. And until we've seen that, I'm not sure that narrative is going to stand up to a strong scrutiny.
Well, I agree with you. And when I lectured over in Amsterdam, I made that exact same point. I felt that, you know, with Bush and as our president at the time, we weren't making any headway. As a matter of fact, we were going backwards. But I recommended that the European Union, as a coalition, this could be an issue that would allow them, because of their enlightened attitudes at the time and still ongoing today, a coalition to stand up to the United States would tilt the playing field in favor of repealing prohibition. So why do you believe that with all the progress that you've made, obviously, and we're going to get into that in a minute, but why do you believe the European Union hasn't taken a unified position against the United States on this issue?
Well, I mean, I think sadly, along with a lot of other significant policy changes that they don't occur until the policy is in deep, deep, deep crisis. And whilst for those of us who work in the field, we've seen this crisis at first hand for many years now, I think that for people who don't operate as near the coalface as we do, that it's not a priority for them, and it isn't a priority until it becomes a real crisis. And I think that the economic crisis that we're now in is changing that for not only for the US, and the Obama effect is clearly having an effect, given that Mexico is about to decriminalize personal possession, where Fox couldn't do it under Bush. He certainly Calderon may well is presumably going to be able to do it with Obama in post. That the crisis, both economically, that the removal of Bush and the breathing space that Obama being in place allows, together with the increasing crisis that prohibition is bringing at producer level, trafficking level, retailing level, and consumption level, that crisis is upon us. But also the analysis is out there in such a way that things will begin to shift. But the reason why it hasn't really up until now, to be completely honest with you, is because politicians don't give a shit. And they give a shit about a lot of other things, but this is not something that's been forced to the top of their agenda. And to the extent that it isn't, it doesn't hold any sway. It's seen as a marginal issue.
Well, do the politicians in your country privately bemoan the fact that prohibition isn't working, but they feel and fear that if they speak up, they won't have the popular support, and it would be the kiss of death, politically speaking?
Again, it's a narrative that runs very strongly that yeah, if you put your head above the parapet, it will be cut off and kicked around for sport. So just to give you an example, I mean, it's I think it's quite neat the way that the that it matches up on both sides of the divide in the special relationship between the US and the UK. So you now have a situation where your president is an ex-dope smoker, an ex-cocaine user, who in 2005 described the war on drugs as an utter failure. And as he's got closer to power, has become more and more equivocal about his position with regard to significant change in policy towards decriminalization, legalization.
Maybe he needs to snort some more coke or smoke a little more pot to get his head right.
Well, I think he probably just needs to remember what his principles are, to be completely honest with you. I'm not sure that drugs are going to help him find them, sadly. Would that it were so easy. We have a situation where our next prime minister is likely to be a man called David Cameron, who is a former dope smoker, probably a former cocaine user, who in 2002 was a member of the Parliamentary Home Affairs Select Committee when it ran an inquiry into UK drugs policy. And he voted for a recommendation, the final recommendation, number 24, which was to call on the UK government to initiate a debate at the Commission on Narcotic Drugs on alternatives to prohibition, including legal regulation. But here's a man who supported the move in cannabis back from Class B, where it had lower penalties, back to Class B, for entirely populist reasons. And I think that what we see here is a dynamic where politicians, as they approach and eventually reach the seat of power, that their views become more and more reactionary. And there is a narrative that says that is to do with loss of popular support, or the fact that you will be taken apart by the reactionary media, or, you know, I can't do that because, you know, fill in the gap, whatever right. The fear is, or the purported evidences to show that this would be quote unquote political suicide. But I don't know that that's true.
Well, here in the U.S., a recent poll found that 76% of American adults believe the drug war is failing. Now, granted, a few of them believe we're just not trying hard enough.
Sure.
But A large majority believe in fundamental change, and of that group, there are a significant number that believe repealing drug prohibition is the right solution. How does that parallel up to the thought of the people in Great Britain on the street? Do they feel that the war on drugs is a lost cause as to the extent that we do? What's popular opinion?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't give you this because it all depends on how you ask the question.
Of course.
But certainly, even on asking the very harshest questions, so do you think that the legalization of hard drugs would reduce crime? I mean, 45% of people would say yes to that in the last poll that I saw, and that's from a few years ago. So at least they understand the analysis
that
prohibition produces a lot of crime. We have the highest level of support for legalization and regulation of all drugs in the European Union. So 22%, over a fifth of all young people, support the entire dismantling of prohibition, its replacement with a system of legal regulation and control.
Well, that's higher than the thought is here. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's higher than the thought over here. And I'm wondering if that's because of your advocacy of